So thank you. Reminds me of a comment by Aaron Wildavsky, who said, if you can't explain the solution to the problem simply, then people will not recognize there's a problem. So his comment was, no solution, no problem. If you have a simple solution, well, there must be a problem. And that's actually what I wanted to talk about today, about dealing with liability for volunteers in disasters. After Katrina, there seemed to be a groundswell of enthusiasm for changing the law governing volunteers in disasters. So we all in academics try to ask the question, what is the problem? What is the problem? What is the concern about volunteers? We hadn't seen a problem. Were there too few volunteers? Well, a lot of people argue there were too few volunteers here and there, but we couldn't find any significant evidence of that. Too few qualified volunteers? Well, yes, in some instances, there were not the right people in the right places. Too many volunteers sometimes, that was a problem, particularly if you had people rushing in at the last minute, the so-called spontaneous volunteers who didn't have a lot of background or education and sometimes just gummed up the works of a fairly organized disaster relief effort. But however you define the problem, one question is, what could be the cause? And there have been several surveys, not many of them with very decent response rates, and most of them hypothetical. What would you do if, right? As opposed to what happened, how do people actually behave? We all know that sometimes people say one thing and behave rather differently. So there's possibility. Some people have reported that, well, they really weren't prepared to or qualified to render a response, or just like a psychiatrist was not prepared necessarily to serve as a trauma surgeon in the middle of a disaster. Lack of resources or supervision, that's often a problem. Coordination of effort and certainly lack of resources in a disaster situation is often the problem. Fear of infection and injury have dissuaded people perhaps not to come forward in a major epidemic. That was the case in some people in SARS, when SARS came to the United States and to Canada in particular. Otherwise, other family work and commitments, they couldn't really escape. That's also a possibility. But the one that we heard about most was everybody's afraid of lawsuits and liability if they're going to volunteer. And that struck me as a little odd because we couldn't find any significant evidence, any evidence, that that was the case. And so there came a series of proposals for what was called altered standards of care. But it seemed that people were using the term in several different ways. One, which makes sense to me, is to develop some medical practice guidelines on how to take care of disaster victims. That's eminently sensible, although it's a little tricky if you don't know what disaster you're going to be in. What seems to work well are groups that train together, like the national medical groups that train together and know how to take care of certain kinds of circumstances. They train together, they work together. Those kinds of circumstances, very valuable, getting people on board with the right kind of background. The idea that an altered standard of care is a limitation on liability struck us as a little odd because it seemed that there was a conflation between medical standards of care and what one's legal duty was. And so it seemed that it would be appropriate to sort of try and clear that up. To recall, the legal duty of care is a generic standard that applies to everybody. All of us have a duty of reasonable care. Everybody in this room, you, me, we all do, right? And we're responsible if we do not behave reasonably and cause injury to someone to whom we have that duty. For professionals, professionals are compared to professionals. If they're acting in a professional capacity, they should be acting as reasonable professionals do. And so the standard of care defined in every single state in terms almost identical to this is that they should exercise the same degree of skill and knowledge that a competent practitioner would in the same or similar circumstances. Notice the same or similar circumstances. So by definition, the legal obligation is to be reasonable under the circumstances. And it accounts for different circumstances. So it obviously could not require someone who is in the middle of trying to help out with the disaster at Katrina, for example, to exercise the kinds of practice standards that would apply in Boston Medical Center or at Mass General Hospital. Just not. Doesn't make any sense, and that's not the obligation. Law doesn't tell people how to practice. It says be reasonable, and people who are in the profession will be able to determine what would be reasonable under the circumstances. That's where the medical standard of care comes in. What's reasonable is what the profession defines. And it's really a standard of medical practice. That is, it's case-specific. What would a competent practitioner do in this case? Law doesn't tell you that. Practitioners tell you that with their own expertise. And so it varies from case to case, established by the profession. It's not established by law. Now, I think people, but the term standard of care has often been used to mean the legal duty of care. And we kind of use this language rather sloppily, both physicians, nurses, lawyers as well. And I think it's important that we understand the distinction here, even if it works together in any particular case, because I think it has caused some unnecessary confusion and some unnecessary fear. So, for example, when you're thinking about changing the duty of care, which is what has been proposed, changing the legal duty, concern about the medical practice standards, say, oh, that means we have to change the legal duty. How exactly could you change the legal duty? I think these are the only possibilities, but I'm open to suggestion. Seems to me that you would have a higher standard or a lower standard. So you want them to exercise more skill and knowledge than a competent practitioner? Nobody's proposing that, believe me. Do you want them to exercise less skill and knowledge? Well, this may be what they mean. I don't say, but I don't think that's what people mean. They mean that they're going to be having fewer resources, not that they're going to, you know, be dumber about things. They're going to be being reasonable with fewer resources. But that's the original standard of care. I'm sorry, it's legal duty of care. Do you want people to exercise the same skill and knowledge regardless of circumstances? No, because in a disaster, you want them to take those circumstances into account. Why would you recommend that? And you certainly wouldn't want them to be an incompetent practitioner and be totally unreasonable. So how exactly could one ever change the legal duty of care? Well, it seems that that's not what proposals have been. It's fallen back on, well, we really don't mean change the legal duty. We mean we want immunity from liability. That's what we really want. So does everybody else, believe me. You can join this estimable group, whom you still want to sue, as I recall. Would you like to grant them immunity from liability because they don't like liability? Nobody likes liability. I would like not to be liable for anything, but I don't get to make that decision, right? We have to think about what's sensible. And there are some problems with limiting liability. First, I think it's based on this misunderstanding that people are afraid that somehow an academic medical center standard of care is going to apply when they're in the middle of a hurricane, which is simply not the law. Number two, if you decide that somehow volunteers in disaster areas should be immune from liability, or at least for negligence, nobody proposes immunity from criminal law. Which is interesting, actually, and then you're essentially saying that disaster victims don't have the same rights as everybody else, right? They don't. That sends a pretty bad message, especially for people in public health who are concerned about disadvantaged populations, and guess what? As you know, people who are already in disadvantaged populations tend to be predominantly the larger share of victims in a disaster. So we are, as Mark Rothstein has noted, you know, adding legal insult to physical injury, which is, I think, a disturbing concept for anyone in this field to And it avoids addressing what the real public health problems are. We really need that kind of training. We need resources. We need coordination. We need supervision. So why are these being proposed? Well, I don't know the answer to this. Thank you. I suspect it can be that where lawyers propose it, lawyers know about liability and they know how to write statutes. They don't know how to train practitioners. They don't have the money to pay them. They aren't terribly good at legislation raising money, but they could be and they should be. And it seems to me that that's a major goal for lawyers looking for improvements in public health preparedness. So they fall back on a narrow solution for which we have yet to find the problem because we don't seem to lack volunteers. So in conclusion, I would just urge you to calm people down. Tell them not to confuse the legal duty of care with the medical standards that should apply in any particular circumstance, because the legal duty just says act reasonably and the profession defines how to do that in the circumstances. I think it's better for us to shift our focus to developing proposals to improve resources and training and preparedness. And with that, I thank you. In the back first? Yes. That's what we're trying to do here.
At the same time, let me offer that I think I do know what people are asking for, but they're using the wrong words.
Yes.
So I was, for several years, the director of the State Health Department in Oregon, and did a lot of work. I have a strong emergency preparedness background in public health, and did a lot of work with the healthcare associations in the state, trying to figure out what was going on, what you were doing. And they totally agree that no practitioner should be protected from doing something bad, something that nobody would say was what should have been done, you know, for doing something that was other than what should have been done. But I think there were two things that came out. One is that physicians actually, in the current era, don't know how to adapt their practice to a less than university or community medical center mode. So they don't have the skill set or the self-confidence to say, oops, I've got to pretend this is a battlefield, because they don't know what to do in the battlefield. So they don't know how to do this shift to appropriate standard of care. The other one is, even if they do everything right, they don't want to get sued. If they do something bad, they want to lose, respectfully. But they just don't want to have to risk getting sued.
Nobody does.
Yes, that's right. But it's a boogeyman in the medical community that is way out of proportion to what it merits. So they don't really want to be protected against liability. They want to be protected against getting sued efficiently and having physical and
it's interesting because we can't find lawsuits against volunteers in these circumstances.
I'm not saying that's real. I'm saying it's
real. But there is some data that physicians do dramatically over-predict their risk of suit of ordinary malpractice, and it's true. And I understand, because a lawsuit is horrible no matter what kind it is, and malpractice is bad. It's bad for both sides. It's a miserable thing. It's all we have left in desperate circumstances. But I think it's important. That's why we're hoping to get a little clarity here, to calm people down and try to focus on the valuable things like training for people who wish to volunteer. Maybe if somebody doesn't know how to work in a situation like that, maybe they shouldn't volunteer. Did you have a comment? A question? Yes.
No, I just wanted to ask you how often. Not that they're all worried about it. I think it must be based on some data.
No.
Everybody's going around getting sued. Does anybody get sued for volunteering?
No. Yeah, it's interesting. Sometimes data is relevant to groups and sometimes not. Donna.
So two things. I think there's work been done to try to get physicians, try to give physicians and practitioners guidance. I think Ms. Tudor-Madison has been doing that work to try to get vaccine guidance out there, and I think it's incorporated in one of those federal grants, to actually work with that. So I think there is a guidance for practitioners now. And the other thing I wanted to add on liability is, even if you were to grant immunity, you wouldn't be granting immunity, say, for willful and reckless, right? So they are
typically
always guilty. Even if they got that, like you said before, you put a piece of paper in the court, you could open, then we would be arguing about, was it negligent or was it willful and reckless? And we've been trying to make this point. I think I've done it successfully at the IOM, but trying to make the point that it is the circumstances, it's already there in the standard, and what you're trying to do is give doctors the tools, the guidance to feel comfortable not practicing the
Yeah, there has been a lot of energy and organization. The IOM, though, I think after coming with a nice discussion of trying to develop attention to training physicians in these circumstances, still came down with saying, but we should still limit liability. So it's like it on the it sort of came out of nowhere. Yes. Yes, Pooh, Dr. Pooh, right? No, I think it was just the single physician. She was accused of homicide, right? A criminal case. And yes, I think that did spark a great deal of the concern. I have seen a testimony by nurses and representatives of other organizations arguing that, she was brought before a grand jury and accused of killing her patients deliberately, not taking poor care of them, but deliberately killing them because she did not think, I don't know why, that they could survive or something, but deliberately killing them. And they say, therefore, we should be protected from liability for negligence. And the two have nothing whatsoever to do with each other, of course. Not only did she... She was absolved by the grand jury. She was not indicted. Absolved. Sorry, I should know better than to say something like that. But right, she was not indicted even with the evidence that they had. So you can't. It's really hard to get a criminal case, an indictment against a physician. But I do think you're correct that there's a little publicity, a little misunderstanding, a little confusion in terminology, and people jump to conclusions that are often counterproductive and distract us from the work that we need to do. Yes? Well, there are different groups, and for example, if you have the national, I just blanked on the terminology, not the Medical Reserve Corps, but the the designated groups that responded to 9/11, they go to Iraq, they go to Iran, they went to Katrina. Those are formed groups, that they stay the same personnel, generally speaking, and they're called up, and they're designated as federal employees, and essentially the federal government can be sued under the Federal Tort Claims Act. There are state groups that can do the same for their employees, and they can take an employee from another and designate it as an employee of the new state if they come into that state. So there is recourse if you have an injured patient. Again, it doesn't happen enough because mostly people are trying to do the right thing. What these new protections were for the random volunteer, and they also wish to, for example, some proposals proposed removing corporate liability or vicarious liability from the organization like Red Cross or Project Hope that brought the volunteers into an emergency. Normally, those organizations tend to be responsible for credentialing and looking at their qualifications and ability to practice and what they can do. But if something were to go wrong, then the organization itself could be held liable, and they could also hold the individual liable. And the Federal Volunteer Act does the same kind of thing. What proposals would do is wipe all of that out, and that doesn't make a lot of sense. If it would leave you, subject to nothing, really. I guess we move on. Thank you very much.